The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, Jeffrey Barnes presents Alibi for Murder on the Mole Mystery Theater. Ed Jerome stars as Blackstone, the magic detective, and the story of the man who saw everything on Incredible But True. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Ed Jerome stars as Blackstone, the magic detective, and the story of the man who saw everything on Incredible But True. Right now, Jeffrey Barnes presents Alibi for Murder on the Mole Mystery Theater as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
And now, the Mole Mystery Theater. Presented by M-O-L-L-E. Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream for tender skins.
Good evening. This is Jeffrey Barnes, welcoming you to the program that presents the best in mystery and detective fiction. Tonight's story is a hard-boiled gangster tale written by Martin Ryerson and entitled Alibi for Murder. It's about a very ordinary young man named Dave Whitman who was destined from birth to be involved in two gangland killings. Yes, destined from birth. Puzzling? Perhaps it'll all be quite clear when you meet gangster Steve Yeager.
Before you begin your story, Mr. Barnes, here's some good advice for men. If you have a wiry, hard-to-cut beard or a tender skin, and that morning shave of yours is just short of murder, then shave with Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream. Yes, sir, man, it's smooth. So smooth. It's slick. So slick. It's a smooth, smooth, slick, slick shave you get with M-O-L-L-E. Mole, the heavier brushless cream for tender skins. That's right. Mole is a heavier cream. The kind of cream you need if you have wiry whiskers or a tender skin. Because Mole is heavier, it not only softens your whiskers, it stands them up straighter and makes them easy to cut. So you shave faster, closer, easier, and you shave painlessly with Mole, the heavier brushless cream for tender skins. Mole. And now here is Jeffrey Barnes with tonight's Mole mystery, Alibi for Murder.
Three men stand in the windowless, ill-lighted little room in the huge warehouse. They are staring in awe at the unconscious man sprawled out on the rickety cot before them. Finally, one of the men speaks.
It's unbelievable, Steve. I read about things like this, but I never expected to see it actually happen.
How bad's he hurt, Doc?
One bullet grazed the back of his head. It's the slug buried in his shoulder might cause trouble. He should go to a hospital.
Hospital, nothing. You do this job yourself at my place.
But, Steve, it's dangerous. He could die.
But he ain't gonna die. You're gonna make sure he don't.
Okay, Steve, you're the big boss. You know I never argue with you.
Pop.
Yeah. Yes, Mr. Yeager?
You're sure nobody knows about him except you?
Well, it happened just like I told you, Mr. Yeager. I heard the shots while I was making my nice rounds of the warehouse. I ran outside, and there he was, laying in a heap on the sidewalk. And the car that the shots came from, beating it away in the darkness. At first, I thought this was you, Mr. Yeager.
Well, you did, huh? You didn't catch the plates in the car, did you?
No, it was too dark, Mr. Yeager.
Okay, Pop, thanks a lot for calling me. I won't forget it. Just keep it under your scalp.
Oh, don't worry, Mr. Yeager. I won't say a word.
I'm sure you won't. Better get back in your rounds now, Pop. I don't want to hold you up and make you late.
Okay, Mr. Yeager. You're very considerate. Good night.
Steve, you shot him in the back.
What's that gag about dead men keeping their mouths shut, Doc? Okay, bust things up, make it look like a robbery. Then let's get this Joe over to my apartment.
Oh. He's coming out of it, Steve.
I want to see what he does when he lamps me for the first time.
He's lifting his head off the pillow, looking around. He sees you.
I wonder, did I look as surprised when I first saw him?
He can't figure it out, Steve. Guess he thinks he's looking in the mirror.
It's okay, pal. You ain't seeing things. It's us. Two of us.
Two of us?
That's right. This is me and that's you. You and me, they made one of us first and forgot to throw away the mold.
That's unbelievable.
You're almost identical twins. Same height, same weight, same faces, same coloring.
What's your name, pal?
Whitman, Dave Whitman.
We found you in front of the warehouse down by the river. You had a nasty hunk of lead in your shoulder. Doc here had a rough time fishing it out.
You're a doctor?
Yeah, this here is Doc Kinsella. I'm Steve Yeager. You're going to see a lot of us.
I don't understand what you mean, Mr. Yeager.
Never mind. You, got many friends in town, Whitman?
No, I just arrived here tonight on a freight.
Riding the rails, huh? A hobo?
No, just out of a job. That's what I had hoped to find here. I figured I'd find me a flop down by the river in that big building.
My warehouse.
Oh, it is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, all of a sudden a car comes racing around the corner and lets me have it.
Only that little lead party wasn't meant for you. That was a surprise cooked up for yours truly.
You, Mr. Yeager?
Yeah. Friends of mine. They took you for me. Then they bust in and murdered a watchman.
But I don't get it.
Forget it. So you're looking for work, huh?
Yeah, any kind of work.
Well, what would you say to a job with me?
In your warehouse?
No, not exactly. This'll earn you a lot bigger piece of change than working down there.
I don't know what that slug did to my brain, but if this is how it feels to be crazy, brother, I want to stay that way.
Yeah, I think you and me are going to get along okay, Whitman. Now, see if you can grab some sleep. Come on, Doc. Lock the door.
Why? He can't...
Lock the door.
Why, Steve?
I don't want anybody to know I got me a spitting image. Sit down, Doc.
Steve, what exactly do you want with Whitman?
I want him so I can be in two places at once. There's a few things I've been wanting to attend to for a long time, Doc. Only I needed an alibi.
I don't follow you, Steve.
It should be simple for a guy with a brain big enough to earn him an M.D.
If I had a big brain, Steve, I'd never allowed myself to be handed my walking papers by the medical association.
All right, skip it. Now, look. I don't like the kind of competition that's crawled into this town.
You mean Goldie Mize?
For one. Slapsy Higgins, number two.
Yeah, whose gunman do you think it was the other night?
Slapsy's. He goes in for that strong-arm stuff. Goldie's too wise for that stuff.
I know, Steve. I heard Goldie's lining up with a lot of tinhorn politicians in town. Guys who can do you lots of harm.
Which means that Goldie and Slapsy gotta be discouraged, but quick. And Whitman, even though he don't know it, is gonna help me do it.
Well, kids, you're looking fine. No one had guessed that 10 days ago you had a slug in you.
Yeah, Doc.
All right, Whitman, let me look at you. And keep that bow tie straight.
And it keeps twisting.
Well, don't let it twist. And don't do up the bottom button on your tux. Huh? Yeah, pull that handkerchief out of your pocket a little further like that.
Okay.
All right, let's go over to the mirror and see. Well, Doc, what do you say?
Except by instinct, Steve, I'd say it was improbable. Even your own mothers could tell you apart.
I hardly know which of us is me.
Neither one of us is you. We're both me. And don't forget it, even for a second.
Yeah, okay, Steve.
Now you're going to my nightclub with Doc.
Your nightclub?
That's right. The Silver Swan. I own it. Doc will point out everybody in the place to you. Tell you anything and everything you need to know about him. If you get in a spot and you don't know what the answer is, just stick a cigar in your face and let Doc do the talking. You got it?
Yeah, I got it.
Now, there's only one rub.
What's that, Steve?
Lorraine.
Oh, Lorraine. She's your girl, isn't she?
How do you know about her?
I read all about her on those clippings in your press book. Sings at your nightclub. Is she really as pretty as that photo on the piano?
Never mind how pretty she is or ain't.
Steve, you usually kiss her when she comes over to the table. If he doesn't kiss her, she might get suspicious and ask questions.
Okay, Whitman, you'll have to kiss her.
Oh, I will?
But make it quick. And when you do kiss her, grab her like I do. Come here, I'll show you how.
Maybe you two would like to be alone.
Shut up!
Don't you dance with her or anything, Steve?
No. Kiss her quick, Whitman, and get rid of her. Tell her that you and Doc got important business. Say you'll see her after the last show. By that time, I'll be there, and you'll be back here in the penthouse again. You understand?
I understand, Steve. Doc, this is just about the greatest experience of my whole life.
Yes, the club starts to ride pretty high at midnight Saturdays.
This place must have cost Steve a small fortune.
It did. But you better close your mouth and stop gaping like you never saw it before. Don't forget you're supposed to be the person who owns it. Here comes the waiter. Order rye highball.
But I like scotch and soda.
Steve likes rye highballs.
Oh.
Evening, Mr. Yeager. Hiya, Doc.
Hello, Mike.
What'll it be, Mr. Yeager? Usual?
Yeah, Mike. Rye highball.
Coming right up, boss.
See that white-haired man with the party at the ringside table over there?
Yeah?
That's John Martin, city magistrate. Wave to him.
Okay. He a friend of Steve's?
Yeah, sort of.
Steve must know important people.
Yeah.
Remember me, mister?
Huh?
Why, all the surprise. You look as if you never saw me before.
Hello, Lorraine.
Hi.
Lorraine.
Well, who'd you think I was? Why are you staring?
Oh, I was just thinking. I don't know whether I ever told you before, but you know that photo of you doesn't half do you justice?
No, Steve, you never told me.
Do you mind if I kiss you?
You don't usually ask, do you?
No, I guess not.
Oh. Well.
Anything wrong?
Hardly.
You look stunned.
Maybe it's because you never kissed me like that before. It seemed to be something different.
Steve, don't forget we've got a lot of important business to talk over.
Oh, yeah, business. I'll see you after the last show, Lorraine. Doc and I have got some important angles to work out.
Yes, sure, Steve, I understand. See you later.
Gosh.
Now, look, kid. Don't let's get any silly ideas. She's all wrapped up with a big expensive tag on the Reed's hands-off property of Steve Yeager.
Yeah, I know, Doc.
Oh, there's the signal from Steve Whitman. Now, you slip into his office and out the back door. Steve will take your place and none the wiser.
You sure nobody caught wise he wasn't me sitting at this table all the while, Doc?
No one, Steve. Not even Lorraine.
Uh-oh. Hang on to your bridge work, Doc. Here it comes.
Where?
Through the front door.
McAfee and Fennec.
Yeah, the headquarters twins.
Well, if it ain't my two old sidekicks, Sergeant McAfee and Joe Fennec. Grab chairs and sit down, boys. What are you drinking?
Sorry, Steve, but this isn't that kind of a visit. Goldie Mize has just been bumped.
Goldie Mize?
Less than an hour ago, Steve.
No kidding, man. Oh, that's tough. Goldie was an okay guy. What's that got to do with me?
Captain got an idea in his head. He wants you brought to headquarters for questioning.
Mac, I've been here in the club with Doc ever since midnight.
You sure, Steve? All the time?
Sitting right here at this table we were.
Well, of course, though, except for about 3 minutes when I went into the office to write out a check.
And we have everybody here in the club to prove we were here. There's John Martin, Health Commissioner Woods.
They'll vouch for you?
Sure. You want me to call them over?
Skip it. I'll talk to them later. Sorry, Steve. Guess we made a mistake.
Yeah. I guess you did.
As the curtain falls on Act One of our story, it looks as though Steve Yeager has an ironclad alibi as far as the death of Goldie Mize is concerned. In just a moment, we'll see what the next move is.
Before you continue, Mr. Barnes, I'd like to say something to our men listeners. Men, I've been asking you for quite a while now to use Mole Brushless Shaving Cream. Well, if you haven't used it yet, why not give your beard and skin a real break and try a Mole shave? When you do, I'm sure you'll find that Mole lives up to everything I've said about it. I've pointed out that Mole is a heavier cream, and it is. The kind of cream you need if you've got a wiry, hard-to-cut beard or a tender skin. It not only softens your whiskers, it holds them up better and lets your razor breeze right through them. In other words, when you shave with Mole, you shave faster, closer, easier, and you shave painlessly. Now, maybe that sounds pretty strong, but if you will just try a Mole shave, I think you'll agree with me when I say it's smooth. So smooth. It's slick. So slick. It's a smooth, smooth, slick, slick shave you get with M-O-L-L-E. Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream for tender skins. Mole. And now back to Jeffrey Barnes and Act Two of Alibi for Murder.
By a strange coincidence, the down-and-out Dave Whitman is a perfect double for the notorious gangster Steve Yeager. While Dave poses as Yeager in the latter's nightclub, the gangster commits a murder. Now Yeager and his sidekick Doc are entering Yeager's apartment.
Did you see that McAfee's puss when I told him I was sitting in the club all the time?
And how quickly you backed down when we started rattling off the names of the witnesses who saw you in the club?
Yeah. Whitman, what do you call this?
Why, you got your old clothes on. The clothes you had on when we picked you up.
You couldn't have been taking yourself a quick run-out, Potter, Whitman.
That's exactly what I'm taking, Mr. Yeager. I didn't expect you back quite so soon. There's a note in your room telling you I'm resigning the fine job you gave me.
Resigning?
Yeah. When I took this job, I didn't know it included murder.
Murder?
I heard all about it on the radio a few minutes ago.
Charlie McCarthy's on the radio. You don't believe everything he says, do you?
It won't work, Steve. You wanted me to take your place at the club tonight so I'd be your alibi while you killed a man named Goldie Mize. Well, that's me out. I'm through as of right now.
Wait a minute, pal. You got this thing all wrong.
Ah, Steve, you're the one who's got it wrong. I'm washed up. I'm gone.
Stay away from that door, Whitman.
Let go my arm, Steve.
Sure, I'll let go right on your kisses.
Okay, Yeager, two can play at that game.
I wouldn't try it, Whitman. You might find a little tough opposition in this gun I'm holding.
Yeah, take this handkerchief and wipe the blood off your mouth. I don't like the sight of blood. That's better.
If you're smart, Whitman, you'll also get any idea you might have about squawking to the police right out of your brain.
That's right. Unless you want to sit in my lap in the electric chair.
What do you mean?
No one would believe you and Steve weren't in on this thing together. Nobody'd ever believe you didn't know what you were doing.
Doc's right. Get smart.
Yeah, smart.
There's plenty in this for you. Now, what about it?
I don't seem to have any choice.
Now, we'll work the same game Monday night.
Okay.
And look, Whitman, just in case you try anything, Doc's going to have a gun on you from the time you walk out this door until you get back again. Right, Doc?
Check.
Doesn't this club ever have a slow night, Doc? It's jam-packed again tonight.
Yeah. What do you keep looking around over your shoulder for? Expecting somebody?
I'll be seeing you, Doc.
Hey, where you going?
To meet the somebody I was looking for. She just came through that little door we were talking about.
Wait, come back here. Hi.
Oh. Hello, Steve.
Hey, you sound surprised.
It's the first time I ever saw you come to meet me.
Anything wrong?
Wrong?
Yeah, you stepped back away from me as I went to kiss you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Steve. Oh.
You look bewildered.
I am.
Why?
Why, you kissed me just now. You kissed me like that Saturday night when I came to your table. Something about it seems so different.
Oh, Steve, we got business to talk over, remember?
Oh, yeah, Doc. I tell you what. You sit down and get all the details worked out, and I'll come back and argue the whole thing out with you.
But, there's that argument in my pocket. I might not wait.
Are you trying to tell me you'd use an argument like that on Steve Yeager in front of all these nice people?
But...
I said sit down, Doc. No, I mean sit down.
Okay. Okay. I'll be waiting.
Doc seems to be kind of unhappy about something.
Doc's getting older, ain't? No more romance.
I never heard you mention the word romance before.
Well, there's a lot of words you probably haven't heard me say that you're going to hear. Shall we dance?
Love to.
Lorraine?
Yeah?
I've been wondering lately. Are you really in love with a guy named Steve Yeager?
That's a funny question. But now that you've asked it, I always liked your looks and type, Steve. But except for twice, I'm afraid I've never been really in love with a man inside.
You said except for twice?
That's right. Saturday and...
Tonight?
Uh-huh. I just can't explain it, Steve. I suppose it sounds kind of silly. But you almost don't seem like the same person.
Now, how did we get back here in the gambling room?
Maybe because I said I felt lucky.
How lucky?
Tonight, just about the luckiest person alive.
You got a quarter, lady?
Could be. Why?
Let me have it. We'll pool our interests. I've got a dime. A very lucky dime.
I thought you never gave...
This is a special occasion. Let's have the quarter.
All right. Here you are.
Here, you drop this lucky dime into your purse. There.
But I...
Come on, let's try our quarter on these slot machines.
All right.
Ah, this looks like a lucky machine. Here, you drop in the quarter.
Okay.
Now, I yank the lever.
Oh, those little wheels are spinning just like my brain. It's all so mixed up.
Four bars. Jackpot!
All those quarters!
Oh, they must be easily $10. Tell you what, you take these quarters to the cashier and get one blue chip.
Steve, I'm so sorry to be long.
Shut up. Where's Whitman? Been cooling my heels in this office for the past half hour. You know I can't leave here until he comes.
He was at the big table, Steve. Let Lorraine walk away with $5,000.
$5,000?
The dealer naturally thought he was you. Every time he smiled, the dealer touched the little button under the table, and the bell stopped on the number Lorraine had her chips
you
on.
You stupid fool. This is all your fault.
But, Steve...
Shut up. Get him over to the penthouse and keep him there. I'll be over later.
Okay, Steve.
That Whitman, I'll break his neck when I get him, that punk.
Hey, boss.
Yeah, Louie?
The headquarters twins just came in. Says they want to buzz you about the murder of Slapsy Higgins.
Okay. Tell Lorraine I want her in here.
Lorraine ducked out a few minutes ago, boss.
Where'd she go?
I don't know, but she looked an awful hurry.
I wonder.
You wonder what, boss?
Nothing. The car out back?
Yeah, in the alley.
Okay, Louie, I want you to drive me home. Fast.
This is Jeffrey Barnes again. In just a few moments, we'll bring you Act 3 of Alibi for Murder.
When you have dandruff, you might just as well try to combat it with plain water as with most ordinary hair preparations. For such products, simply remove loose dandruff, and you can do that with plain water. To do more, to fight dandruff effectively, use Double Dandrine. For Double Dandrine is a scientific product that does what most ordinary hair preparations can't do. It goes to work on your scalp and actually kills on contact the germs that many outstanding authorities contend are a cause of a common type of dandruff. Now, the reason for Double Dandrine's amazing effectiveness is that it contains a special ingredient called Alzan, an active antiseptic so remarkably efficient, many hospitals use it. Among hair preparations, Double Dandrine and Double Dandrine alone contains Alzan. So stop trying to combat dandruff with preparations that can't compare with Double Dandrine. If you're not satisfied, return the empty bottle and get your money back. Buy Double Dandrine at your druggist's.
Lorraine, you shouldn't have come here to the penthouse.
Lorraine.
Suppose Steve should.
Steve Yeager. Oh, darling, I'm glad. I'm so glad.
Oh, Lorraine, darling. I tried so many times to tell you the truth tonight, but for once Doc's right, you shouldn't have come here.
Who are you?
My name's Whitman, Dave Whitman.
Don't say any more, Whitman, I warn you.
Steve used me as his alibi for murder. I would have made a break for it, but I couldn't go without you. With that money we won tonight, Lorraine, I hoped we could go away somewhere and start over.
You've got to go, Lorraine. If Steve finds you, he'll kill both of you.
Been reading my mind, huh, Doc?
Steve.
Steve, I didn't hear you come in.
Louis just drove me over from the club. Well, just like something out of the movies. The big hero with a protecting arm around the girl's waist. It's kind of corny, Whitman. So this is why you took the quick run out from the club, huh, Lorraine?
I was right. There are two of you.
But not for long. Whitman, where are those rags you first came in?
Why?
Don't ask questions. Where are they?
In the bottom of the closet in the bedroom.
All right, Doc. Keep that gun of yours aimed at his shirt stud. I got me a quick change to make. Hope I didn't keep you waiting too long. Well, Doc, what are you gaping at?
Gosh, Steve, you look just like Quitman did that first night. The clothes, everything, even your mussed up hair.
Yeah, not to dump these things.
Hey, that's your wallet and credentials you're putting on the table.
Won't need them anymore. Now, Doc, I'll take your rod.
Sure, sure, Steve. Here, but I don't understand.
It's simple, Doc. This is the end of the line. This is where you three get off.
Three?
And Steve Yeager goes on alone.
But, Steve...
You've outlived your usefulness, Doc. Besides, you and these two are the only people in the world who know I have a double.
But, Steve, I wouldn't talk. You know that.
I know you haven't talked so far.
But, Steve, I'm not Popper Slaps Your Goldie. I'm your friend.
I'm taking no chances, Doc. You, this two-timing dame, and the phony Steve Yeager get the lights blown out here and now.
Steve, no, please.
I had it figured out for a long time, Doc. You and the dame get it with my gun. Then while you're dying, you give it to Whitman here with your gun. Anyway, that's how it's going to look to the cops.
You're going to make them think Dave is you? That he killed Doc?
That's right. Gonna look swell in the tabloids. Doc Kinsella fooling around with Steve Yeager's girl, and who walks in but Steve?
You'll never get away with it, Yeager.
Why won't I? The cops haven't even got a fingerprint of me. I'll just fade into the ozone and become a character named Dave Whitman.
But why, Steve? Goldie's gone, Slapsy's gone. You've no more competition in town. So, Steve.
Too bad. Doc wasn't a bad guy.
You ain't kidding, Mac.
What?
Doc was the best.
Louis.
Ice front and drop the gun.
Don't be crazy, Louis. Take that rod out of my back.
Drop it, I said.
I don't know what you're doing, Louis.
Shut up and turn around so I can look at you.
All right, you satisfied it's me?
Steve. And another Steve over there. Am I seeing double or something?
Of course you're not seeing double. I'm Steve Yeager. This guy's just a hobo.
I don't know. I'd say you look more like the hobo in them clothes.
Louis, don't be stupid. I'm Steve, I tell you. Look at me.
Yeah, Louis, look at us. Good.
I'm all mixed up.
Now, it's simple, Louis. It's just a shakedown. He found out he looked like me, killed a couple of people, and then tried to blackmail me.
He's lying, Louis. I'm Steve Yeager.
If he was Steve Yeager, would he shoot Doc Kinsella, his best friend?
No. No, I guess he wouldn't.
Louis, he's trying to confuse you. Look, they're my credentials on the table.
No, Louis, they're my credentials. I just told you he was trying to shake me down.
I want to be sure. I wouldn't want to pull this trigger on the wrong guy.
You'll be pulling it on the wrong guy if you kill me.
Wait a second, Louis. You know whose girl Lorraine is, don't you?
Sure, everybody knows that. She's Steve Yeager's girl.
Then ask her which one of us she loves.
It's a trick, a dirty, rotten trick.
Ah, that wasn't very smart, him trying to rush my gun. Gosh, I didn't want to kill a guy. But, well, you saw for yourself, Steve. He was grabbing for my gun. It was either him or me.
We've got to get out of here quick before the police come.
Yeah. We better get out of here.
You go ahead, Louis. A few things I got to clean up here.
Yeah, okay, Paul.
Quick, lock the door.
Right.
Good. Now then.
What are you doing, Dave?
The only thing we can do. I'm calling the police.
Where are we going, Dave?
Any place where people won't take me for Steve Yeager's ghost. Mm. Brother, what a job it was straightening out that mess with the police.
Yes, especially after they picked up Louis and he insisted you were Steve. Mm. What are you thinking about, darling?
Well, honey, 2 weeks ago, I rode into town in a freight car with a thin dime in my pocket. Now I'm riding out of town with the world in the palm of my hand.
And now this is Jeffrey Barnes again, inviting you to be with us next week when we present a great study in suspense entitled The Creeper by Joseph Rusco.
The original music for the Mole Mystery Theater is composed and conducted by Alexander Semler. Alibi for Murder was written and adapted for radio by Martin Ryerson. Elspeth Eric, Mandel Kramer, and John Sylvester were featured in tonight's program. This is Dan Seymour saying goodnight until next Friday at this same time when the Mystery Theater presents The Creeper.
Tonight's Mystery Theater presentation came to you from Radio City in New York. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
This thing called love, this funny thing called love, just who can solve its mystery? And why should it make a fool of me? Saw you there one wonderful day, but you took my heart and you threw my heart away. That's why I ask the Lord up in heaven above, just what is this thing called love?
You are listening to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, featuring Frank Sinatra singing Cole Porter's What Is This Thing Called Love from 1955. We also heard Alibi for Murder on the Mole Mystery Theater. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s, when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, the man who saw everything on Incredible But True. But first, Ed Jerome stars as Blackstone, the magic detective in the case of the vanishing brooch, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Magic Detective, starring the world's greatest living magician, Blackstone. He tells you the inside story of The Vanishing Brooch. And right after the story, Blackstone will explain tricks that you yourself can perform, reveal the guarded secrets of the world's greatest living magician. Now, stand by for Blackstone, the magic detective.
Watch this, Ellen. I'm going to put this ring of mine down here on the table.
What about it?
Well, you just watch him and see.
Now, there it is, lying right there by this little carved box. Now, I pass my hands over it and
it's gone.
Where'd it go, Ellen? Can you figure it out?
Oh, I know. It went into the box.
Here's the box. See if you can find it.
Well, it doesn't rattle when I shake it. Yet it must be here. It can't have vanished into thin air.
Well, sometimes jewels seem to, don't they, Blackstone?
They certainly seem to. Remember that case at White, Snow, and Carter's?
Sure, they vanished there, all right.
That's a jewelry store, isn't it? I never heard of jewels vanishing from there.
It was pretty well hushed up at the time.
What's the story?
Tell Alan about it, Blackstone.
Well, Rhoda and I went into White, Snow, and Carter's one day to have my watch repaired. As we were standing at the counter waiting to be served, Miss Fanning, the manager, came up to us.
Oh, Mr. Blackstone, how providential that you came in this morning.
Oh.
I was going to call you. Would you mind stepping into my office for a moment?
Not at all.
Thank you so much. Right this way. Mr. Blackstone, the most dreadful things have been happening lately. Perfectly appalling.
What's been going on?
There have been robberies. Right here in the store, things have vanished.
Well, don't you have detectives around here? With as many valuable things as you have, I should think
My dear girl, of course we have detectives. But they haven't discovered anything. Nothing at all. We've checked our clerks. We've kept an eye out for shoplifters. We've done everything.
And still things disappear?
Yes. By only yesterday, a ring, a sapphire ring, was spirited away right from the counter.
Well, what have the police to say about all this?
Oh, mercy, we haven't called them.
Well,
we couldn't. It would ruin us.
But why?
Most of our jewels are here on consignment. Well, you don't think people would continue to trust their valuables to us if the news got out? We've made good all losses so far, but we can't afford to continue indefinitely, even to escape the publicity. After all, there is a limit to what a shop can afford to spend.
Naturally.
Would you help us?
Well, I...
What's that?
That's the burglar alarm. Something more has been stolen.
Oh, let's get out of the store, quick.
Yes. Blast that infernal racket. Miss, would you be good enough to stop that noise? How can a person make a selection with that racket going on?
Oh, gee, mister, I'm sorry.
Go and depart, that's what this shop is. Go and depart. In my father's time, blast it all, this sort of thing wouldn't be put up with for a moment.
Oh, gosh, mister, I
don't
didn't...
let anyone leave the store, Miss Fanning.
Look at that old goat, Blackstone. He sounds like you're going to have a fit.
I've waited in this shop for 50 years, and dash it, this is the end. I shall take my trade elsewhere if I can't have peace and quiet. Good day, madam.
Don't let him leave, Miss Fanning.
Why, that's Colonel Chisholm, one of our most esteemed customers. Well, surely you can't think...
Don't let him leave. Try to pacify him into staying. I'll see to the other customers.
Very well, if you say so. Colonel Chisholm!
I'm taking my trade elsewhere, Miss Fanning.
Oh, I can't tell you how sorry I am that all this disturbance occurred while you were here, Colonel Chisholm.
Apologies are all very well. But can they mend damaged nerves? I ask her that, madam. Can they mend damaged nerves?
Oh, Miss Fannin, I'm so sorry. It was at their ruby brooch. I was showing it to the colonel, and then I started to get something else, and the brooch was gone.
This young lady had the impudence to suggest that I had put it in my pocket.
I didn't say that. All I said was, did he know where it was, maybe? And he got all red in the face and started howling like a banshee.
My good woman, I never howl.
Well, you started making a heck of a racket.
Mabel, that will be enough.
I'm sorry, Miss Fannin, but he was howling like a banshee.
Mabel, if you'll just come into my office, Colonel Chisholm, and sit down for a few moments.
The old rooster, he's nothing but trouble, no matter how much he spends.
He seemed to be kind of mad.
Hey, away? Where are they taking all them people?
I think they're all going to be searched.
Well, I'll be darned. They won't find nothing on them, though. This happened yesterday when that sapphire ring vanished.
Huh?
Same thing. I was waiting on the colonel then, too. He got awful hot under that funny wing collar of his.
Did they search him, too?
Nah, he wouldn't steal nothing. He's got all the money in the world, except $16, and I get that next payday. No point in searching him. Anyway, nobody dare. He hit out with that cane of his and popped him.
Come here a minute, will you, please?
Oh, yeah. Well, I gotta be running. Guess them dicks will want to search me, too. So long, Ned.
Goodbye. Did you find anything out, Blackstone?
They're letting those customers go. None of them have anything. They're going to search the store next.
Well, that brooch didn't walk out of here. That's one sure thing. What are we going to do now?
I'm going to have a chat with the doughty colonel. And you are to make a phone call.
It's an outrage. My attorney will call on you in the morning, Miss Fanning. And as for you, Mr. Blackstone, I promise you we will settle this in the courts of law.
Oh, Colonel Chisholm, it's a dreadful mistake, I assure you. Oh, Mr. Blackstone was overstepping a little when he insisted on searching you. You have my apology, and you shall have the written ones of my board of directors in the morning. I can't tell you.
Search like a common thief. I, one of the Chisholms of Kentucky, search like a common thief. My hat, if you please. I shall leave immediately to consult my attorney and my doctor. My nerves, you know.
One moment, if you please, Colonel.
I certainly do not please. I've been searched. You found nothing. My hat, Blackstone.
I think we shall keep your hat, Colonel.
I beg your pardon, my good man.
We shall need it as evidence.
Mr. Blackstone, have you lost your mind? Why, Colonel Chisholm is one of our most esteemed customers.
So you told me before, but here is the missing brooch, Miss Fanning. And Rhoda has called the police.
That old man, Blackstone, surely he didn't really steal the brooch and the sapphire ring.
And all the other things that had been vanishing? Oh, but he had.
Well, how? You say he was searched and yet nothing was found on him.
Oh, but they didn't really search the hat.
What do you mean?
I had shaken the hat to see if anything was concealed inside it and found nothing.
It was a high silk hat, Alan.
And then I noticed that there was a tiny bulge a few inches down from the crown. It was a magician's hat, Alan. A hat with a false top.
Colonel Chisholm had simply palmed the brooch, or whatever, and hidden it in the false crown of his hat. It was lined with cotton so the ring wouldn't rattle, like the box Blackstone fooled you with, Alan.
Well, how do you know how to do it? Can't be an easy thing.
Well, it came out at the trial that he'd once been a magician's assistant for a while and learned a trick or two.
I must remember that if you ever fire me, Blackstone.
Oh, don't you dare.
How come he was such an esteemed customer if he was just a crook?
Well, he wasn't just a crook, Alan. He was a very smart one. He'd buy things at the shop, pay for them, and then steal other things worth infinitely more. Nobody ever suspected him.
Until Blackstone came along.
Well, Blackstone recognized the hat from seeing some magician use that kind.
And so, another mystery was solved by magic.
Right, Alan.
And now, Blackstone, what about a card trick? And one that will really fool us.
And one that we can do after you show us how.
Well, that's a fair enough request. Well, Rhoda, suppose I let you try the trick yourself.
And fool myself with it?
More or less. Here's the pack of cards.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose I deal off a bunch. Meanwhile, tell me, can you sing?
What is singing to do with a card trick?
Oh, that's just a gag, Alan. Blackstone is trying to fool us already.
I wonder if he's going to let us shuffle those cards.
You mean this bunch I just dealt? Here, Rhoda, you shuffle this packet.
All right, now let's have them.
But what about the rest of the pack?
Well, you can shuffle that for yourself, Alan.
Thanks. Here goes.
You shuffled enough?
This bunch of cards is really mixed.
And so is the rest of the pack.
Good. From now on, the trick is all yours. Now, take that packet of yours, Rhoda. Hold it toward you so you can see the bottom card.
All right.
Remember that bottom card, but don't let me see it.
I remembered it.
Fine. Now, drop your cards on the pack that Alan is holding.
There they are.
I'll square that pack, Alan, and hand it to Rhoda.
All right. There you are, Rhoda. I hope you remember that card.
Well, hey, that's easy. Rhoda will find it for herself.
You mean by looking for it?
No, just by singing Yankee Doodle.
Oh, now wait.
I don't want you to wait. Just sing Yankee Doodle and deal cards right off the pack in time to the music.
Well, silly, but here goes.
Yankee Doodle went to town riding on a pony. Put a feather in his hat and called it macaroni.
Stop right there.
Well, of course I'll stop. The song's over.
But hold that card. Huh? The card you finished the song with.
All right, what about it?
What was the card you looked at in the first place?
The Six of Hearts.
Turn up the card and look at it.
The card and look at... That's a Six of Hearts.
Surprised, Rhoda? I'll be back in a minute to show you how you did it. Well, Rhoda, have you figured it out?
Oh, golly, nobody could.
Oh, it was very simple. So simple that it couldn't miss.
Mm.
Now tell me, how many beats of music are there to Yankee Doodle?
Yankee Doodle went to town riding on a pony. 16.
That's right. So I began the trick by counting 16 cards from the pack and giving them to you.
You mean you were counting those cards you took off at the start?
That's right. Only I didn't tell you so. I just counted 16 cards to myself.
So I had 16 cards, and I shuffled them?
Yes. And then you looked at the bottom card because I told you to.
And that was the 16th card?
Exactly. So you put your batch of cards on the pack.
And the card I looked at, the Six of Hearts, was the 16th card.
That's right, Rhoda. It was all set so you'd find it in your hand when you finished singing Yankee Doodle.
A card to every beat. Well, that's the way I dealt them.
Indeed.
Oh, did I fool myself that time.
And you can make your friends fool themselves if you work this trick on them.
I hope you like that trick, ladies and gentlemen. And so, until next time, this is Blackstone wishing you good magic and goodbye.
Be with us next time when the world's greatest living magician, Blackstone, tells us the story of crimes on a merry-go-round and explains more tricks that you yourself can perform. Listen in again to Blackstone, the world's greatest living magician.
You boys and girls won't object to Grove's emulsified nose drops. There's nothing unpleasant about them. They don't run out of your nose and make you messy. They don't run down the back of your throat and make you sickish. What's more, they don't burn or sting the inside of your nose. They quickly check a head cold and yet do it in a nice way. These nose drops are something brand new and a big improvement on old-fashioned oil drops. Mother is interested in getting results when you have a cold in the head, and she'll get results much faster with Grove's emulsified nose drops. In every section of the country, Grove's emulsified nose drops are selling at an amazing rate. That's because they are better in every way. Grove's emulsified nose drops will surprise you with the way they look and act. These nose drops are white and creamy. They don't look, taste, or smell like medicine, yet they are highly effective. That's because they are medically superior, because they stay up in the nose. Any child can understand that nose drops that stay up in the nose will do more good than nose drops that run right out. Impress this fact upon mother, and she will undoubtedly let you try these new type nose drops when you have a head cold or stuffed head. All drugstores sell Grove's emulsified nose drops, and they're really more economical than the old-fashioned kind because you get more for your money and because you can use less. Ask mother to get a bottle today.
At a time when he had already achieved recognition as one of America's most eminent inventors and physicists, Thomas A. Edison conducted a series of experiments in thought transference. He constructed an elaborate electric apparatus and sought, by means of it, to bring about purely mental communication. But, as he himself freely admitted, he obtained not the slightest results. And yet, Thomas Edison believed in extrasensory perception, for long before this he had met a man called Reese, the man who saw everything.
It was a friend of Thomas Edison's, a young woman named Miss Olson, who first interested him in the man named Reese. A few days later, Reese appeared at Edison's laboratory.
Well, let's have a demonstration.
All right, sir. Miss Olson,
Would you mind going into the other room and writing down on a piece of paper your mother's name, the place of her birth?
One minute there, young man. What proof do I have that you and Miss Olson haven't made a few prior arrangements before you ever got here? No, I demand to be the subject. I'll be the one who goes out of the room.
And with that, Thomas Edison, his eyes twinkling brightly and a smile of triumph on his face, slipped out of the room and walked across the courtyard to an adjoining building.
My experiment with the alkaline electric battery. He couldn't know about that, because nobody in the world but myself does.
Chuckling to himself, he scribbled in small and almost illegible letters the question which had so long troubled him.
Is there anything better than hydroxide of nickel for an alkaline battery?
Then he folded the paper several times and held it clutched in his hand. And then at last he left the building and retraced his steps to the room where Reese and Miss Olson awaited him. He said nothing as he entered. It was Reese who spoke first.
Do you really want my opinion, Mr. Edison?
Why? Oh, I don't know what you're talking about, young man.
Well, you asked me a question, didn't you? And here's the answer. No, there is nothing better than hydroxide of nickel for an alkaline battery.
Thomas Edison had no explanation for the incident. He could only accept it as valid and authentic, if incomprehensible. As he himself put it,
I do not pretend to be able to explain this faculty. I am convinced that the needs of civilization will produce some great discovery by means of men endowed with this power. The rare seers of the present generation will become the multitude of coming generations.
In these words, America's great scientist expressed his faith in a power which is still looked upon with skepticism by other scientists of lesser stature than he. A power that enables men to see without the use of their senses. A power incredible but true.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, featuring an episode of Incredible but True, in Ed Jerome as Blackstone the Magic Detective, first broadcast on radio on September 4th, 1949. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows, on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.